Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is episode 9 of the 2023 season. Matthew Davis and I are recording on March the 21st, a few days away from Vegas main event and about 10 days away or a week, I guess, man, or 9 days away from the regular season, from opening day beginning. And yeah, the dust is starting to settle. ADP settling in with some main events. And I'm here, as always, with my partner in pod crime. That's Matthew Davis. You can find him on Twitter at Matty Wood. Matt, what's going on, bud?
What it do, baby? You can find me at the United Club Lounge tomorrow morning, sucking down as many Bloody Marys as they will allow me to have before catching my flight to Las Vegas. So this feels like, you know, the week off of Thanksgiving or, you know, spending time with your family during the holidays, whether it be in December or whatever. It's just a very exciting time of year. And now that I live in Chicago, I don't see as many people as I normally do on a daily basis when that comes to friends or people that I know, being that I am in a new city and state. So getting to see a bunch of familiar faces is very exciting. And obviously the drafting as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so we now have 9 main events of the NFBC in the books. They began last Saturday and going to be continuing to filter through until the big weekend here in Las Vegas and all through the rest of the season. So everything's getting set there. Obviously a lot of things as expected with starting pitching moving up and of course people need to adapt to whatever it is they're drafting. Obviously, if you're in a home league where there isn't that push of starting pitchers, you obviously don't have to do that. So definitely play within the parameters of your league and what you're comfortable with. But yeah, I mean, the dust is starting to settle. We've got a bunch of players being sent down to the minors. We've got some major injury news since we've last spoken. So today let's talk about, just kind of prepping for our drafts and some of the crazy things that have been going on, and as well as some injury news.
Yeah, it's rather unfortunate that we're seeing this. Two of the biggest ones have came from the WBC, and we'll talk about Jose Altuve and Edwin Diaz when we get there. But overall, I'm actually kind of okay with where we're at with the amount of injuries or the volume, right? I feel like most springs or in springs past, we've seen so many big top tier pitchers get, you know, just taken out because of a forearm or a shoulder or whatever it may be injury wise. And then it slowly depletes the pitching pool. And we're seeing pitching get pushed up like normal, which, you know, we were all expecting that anyways. But it is nice to see that we haven't lost a lot of those big fish up top like we've seen in years past. I know that Rodon and Joe Musgrove were two of them, but it feels like we've seen more in the past with the pitching on the pitching side of things.
Yeah. And there aren't even many discounts there going on with mm-hmm. those specific guys. Of course, Joe Musgrove is sort of, he's creeping back up into his ADP range now that he's taking the mound and going to return, and it won't be right away, but probably miss a start to max. So definitely good there in the, you know, right before pick 100, I think is kind of where he is settling in. We've seen Carlos Rodon kind of prep back up with the expectation of just a couple of missed games, maybe 2 to 3. But I think I've seen an ADP on him somewhere in the 4th, 5th round, if I'm not mistaken, like 50, 60, 70. So it just depends on your draft and where you want to pop him, of course. And then, of course, Tyler Glasnow, who we've talked about, and he's just still hanging out there in the mid-hundreds between 150 and 200. But real quick, and this is especially for the gentleman on Twitter who last week told us that we basically do much more propping of FTN than we do actual content. So just wanted to let you know, bud, that you can access everything that you want at ftnfantasy.com/MLB. You can use promo code FTNPOD if you haven't already. Get 20% off either our standard package, high stakes package. Now is the time. Even if you're prepped up and you're ready for your drafts and you don't think you need us, you're going to want it in season, especially with our hitter rankings, pitcher rankings, fab content. So everything at ftnfantasy.com/MLB.
When is that first fab article coming out?
So the plan for that is before I leave for Vegas, I'm going to post my annual FAP primer. Most people that are familiar with the NFBC won't find anything specifically crazy or wild in there that they maybe haven't seen in the past or that they don't already know. But if you are playing NFBC for the first time, it'll be really helpful to get a feel for how things work there, some strategy with FAB. And then I will be coming back from Vegas Saturday night, and then Sunday at some point, I'm going to just post. It won't be an in-depth article, but it'll, because it is the first FAB period for all the teams that had drafted up until that point, I'll have some lists there for 12 and 15 teamers, people that players that people absolutely should be bidding on.
Very nice. Yeah, because some drafts did start in the wintertime, or even for the sickos that started drafting October, November. There are, you know, there's been a lot of movement and stuff like that. So there will be some player pools via FAB that have a little bit more availability, maybe not with the DCs because those were too early in this, obviously no FAB with that. But like when the OCs first started cranking out, you know, there's been some definitely some differentials in ADP.
Yeah. So people that had drafted in January or even February probably are going to see some, you know, 95% rostered players there that are going to go for a lot of money. So we'll talk about that. We'll go over that pretty soon. So about the injury news, we can just touch on Altuve and Edwin Diaz real quick. But just curious how you feel about Altuve in general. I mean, obviously, we want to talk about with a short bench in NFBC and only having a bench of seven, not really forcing too many stashes, right? So if you like Altuve and you want to grab him there and say, you know, somewhere between 200 and 300 overall, you don't really want to have a lot of other guys. Like you don't want to grab Brandon Fat or, you know, other players that you may be waiting on, whether they're injured or in the minors. But I wanted to ask you specifically if you have any interest in him still, and if anything is affected for you as far as Kyle Tucker there in the middle of the first round, and just this offense in general.
So the Astros are just starting to get this feel, right? Things aren't going right. They lose Justin Verlander to free agency to the New York Mets. Jose Altuve breaks his thumb in the World Baseball Classic. Michael Brantley's not going to be ready for opening day. And now Jordan Alvarez, right? Jordan Alvarez, we've seen the slow progression of him swinging the bat and getting ready for game time. So on the positive side, when you ask about Kyle Tucker, is he better fucking be hitting somewhere in the top three or four with all these injuries, right? So I think that for the question marks we had for KT when it came to where he would hit in the lineup, I think that this does move the needle just a bit for him to get that opportunity at the top of the lineup. And what that does is also potentially gives him the rope to keep it when Brantley and Altuve return. And then when it comes to Altuve, I didn't have any exposure whatsoever. And there's some reasoning behind that, but we don't need to get into that. I didn't have any, and I'm definitely not going to, just because I don't like to wear what you're saying with, knowing somebody's going to be out for 8 weeks, 2 months. So you're already carrying some dead weight. That alone takes away the opportunity to roll out an additional reliever potentially for the first weekend. And we'll get into some of that later on, but, it does harness you from the get-go, and I don't need to be getting drugged through, you know, thick sand right away. And, so even Bryce Harper, I know there's positive news on him, right? The Phillies aren't expected to put Harper on the 60-day IL. He'll probably get a little bit more inflation after that news. I'm also probably not going to be willing to carry that either. So for players like that are hurt, and we know that they have some sort of timeline to return, and if it's too long, I'm just not going to bite.
Yeah, and on the Harper thing, I read something where it was a roster related, and that they would still expect him to be out that time. I don't think it kind of pushes up his timeline at all. But either way, I mean, I just, there's personal preference, right? I'm already a risky drafter in some cases. If you saw my recent draft board with DeGrom and Buxton, the double whammy there, you probably think that grabbing a Harper is probably not a wise idea for me. But hey, that could be your one stash if that's what you're into. But I just can't pay that price point there in the mid 100s. I think, you know, I think it would be a rare opportunity for me to be able to snag him somewhere. With Edwin Diaz, very sad. So we discussed him last Tuesday, and the very next day he tore his patella tendon, out for essentially what looks like the season now. and we've seen David Robertson step up into the top 200 overall. He's going around Alex Lange, now a little bit ahead of Evan Phillips. And so there, of course, is conversation around Adam Ottavino potentially maybe grabbing some saves here and there, maybe Brooks Raley as well, who may be back for opening day. Of course, they can always trade for someone. There's rumors of signing Zach Britton. So a lot of things to do there. But has David Robertson moved up your draft board as well? And are you interested in him as an RP2 around his current price point in like the 12th, 13th round?
No, it's important that you note that he is RB2, right? So at this point in the draft, we're looking around pick 200. The plan for everybody, I would hope, is you've at least gotten your RP1 and some foundation there for saves. And then you get to this 200 range, and there are some decent starting pitching targets around this range. But then there's other guys, right? As you look down the main event ADP over nine drafts, just for an example, Kyle Finnegan, Michael Fulmer, I'm just kind of scrolling down, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jorge Lopez. So there's other guys, right? Greg Kimbrell, not like or dislike any of them. Just as an example of other relievers in still sort of a questionable right role. There's uncertainty. So I don't think that just because Diaz is out now, Robertson's most certainly the guy. And then we already know how the ownership and the organization with New York and the Mets are being very aggressive. So I wouldn't be stunned to see them acquire somebody from the outside. So similar to the offseason article I wrote about bullpen conundrums is what companies do. They do the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And I think that there could be opportunities for David Robertson, but I also think that the increase of threats is still there. And he doesn't have many strengths at this point in his career, right? So I just don't think that his juice will be worth the squeeze, especially because even somebody like Reynaldo Lopez, I mean, everybody fucking loves him. Now, ADP is 100 picks later. Could he not replicate Robertson, right? Or get the opportunities? We still just don't know for sure, at least as of today. And with the stuff that he possesses and with where the organization is trending, I think that his leash could be very short if he does get the opportunity.
Yeah. And so the day after this occurred, basically Andy Martino of SNY TV basically said that Robertson and Brooks Raley looked like the primary option for saves. A couple days later, we heard that Ottavino was in the mix. We've seen Ottavino bump into the low 300s in ADP. And the one thing to note about David Robertson, although he saved 20 games, played for a couple of teams last year, he's 37. He had a 13% walk rate last season, and basically all of his ratio indicators were a full run over his actual ERA of 240, xFIP of 371, FIP of 358, and Sierra was up there as well, 343. So he's interesting, but yeah, it just starts to get into a really dicey range. It reminds me again that I really want to kind of pop that first guy early, one of those top eight guys.
You know, we don't talk a lot about home leagues or Yahoo leagues, to that extent. We're more NFBC centric, but we still do have that one true home league, right? We all have that one that we have that we really want to win, that's still competitive. It's with longtime friends from elementary school or high school or college or whatever it may be, even work, colleagues, etc. I'd like to pour one out for my buddy, my good friend Scooter, who in our home league auction has been going on for over a decade. He acquired Jose Altuve and Edwin Diaz in the auction. And we drafted last weekend. And so, or the weekend before, time's going by fast. So I wanted to pour one out for him, because that's just, man, if you drafted, and there's a possibility, there's probably some high stakes DCs that might have Altuve and Diaz, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You drafted early, but on the flip side of that, there's always a possibility of seeing players, you get them at an earlier, lower cost, and now all of a sudden they're going way higher. So
One other guy there near the top, and that's Juan Soto. Well, technically a first rounder, of course, but he has not yet fallen out of the first round, a max pick in the main events of 15. And he had the calf issue earlier in spring and tweaked his oblique a little bit, though they say it's mild. He is having an MRI, still expected to be ready for opening day, but I'm wondering if that's going to kind of have him drop a little bit? Do you think now he might kind of fall into that Yordan Alvarez range in the early second round? And like, what happens if like Soto and Alvarez end up just being okay? You got a 15 pick, you pop both of those, and you're flying if everything hits well.
Yeah, that could be pretty sweet. You did use the term mild when it came to his he's kind of like the Friday guy, right? That you're talking about last week in my neck, my back. So he's got all this stuff going on, albeit it's not those injuries. And mild, like he likes to be spicy, but we haven't seen so much spice from him because he's, you know, kind of been in limbo. So him and Jordan Alvarez, they're just a no-go for me when I'm flying from Chicago to Las Vegas and I'm doing high stakes drafts. I'm not a big whale, so I'm not doing 10 main events, and I don't have the fortunate enough to be able to spread out my player exposure to that extent. So for me, neither of them actually weren't really major targets for me at the end, or even 10 through 15 in a draft. It sucks that we're seeing this because I would like that top draft capital player pool to stay nice and, you know, solid. But yeah, anything like this early on, I wrote up Jordan Alvarez at FTN Fantasy as my round one fade. Spoiler alert, if you haven't read it, it's been out for a couple weeks. And so like Soto would kind of fit that bill now too. Similar thing kind of going on. And I just don't want any part of it.
And Juan Soto is actually one of my favorite players in the first round. I do have a lot of shares of him in Draft Champions and some other places, but pulled back a little bit. I still have him up there among the runs leaders. I still think that hitting second on that team, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt of what an amazing real life baseball player Juan Soto is, and obviously has strong value in fantasy as well, and especially in that San Diego lineup. We talked about it a few weeks ago on the Outfielders Pod. But yeah, I mean, if like you said, you're putting in a big money that you work hard for in your one draft, you don't want to injury risk right off, kind of off the bat. I mean, even if the oblique is fine, there's just kind of these too many of these little things, and calf is something that could be troublesome for a while. Like it just feels a little dangerous. So honestly, I would not be surprised if there's just this kind of stigma around Juan Soto now. Might be just, you know, for a week or whatever, and then maybe just takes off swimmingly during the course of the season. But I can absolutely see him falling into the early second round.
Yeah, absolutely. I can also see him not falling at all because people fucking love him.
Yeah, and as they should.
Yes.
A couple more players here. Mitch Haniger for the San Francisco Giants. He's resumed running and throwing an oblique issue as well, which is always rather troubling for hitters. But it does look like he might return mid-April. And we've seen a stark drop in ADP. So all winter long, he was right around, you know, 185 in the 12th round, usually as a third outfielder, I guess you could say. Nice, solid hitter, likely the best hitter on on San Francisco if he's healthy. We've seen his main event price drop considerably. So it's around 270 now, about almost 100 picks. If it does look like he's back, I think maybe this weekend he ends up maybe somewhere in the middle. I don't know. I don't necessarily see, you know, just me looking at the early season schedule for San Francisco and the lack of opportunity and some of his past injury history. I don't know if I'll be big on the Mitch Haniger market this weekend.
Yeah. So when we did our outfielder preview, I kind of used the Office Space. What is it that you do here with Mitch Haniger, right? I was kind of bashing him just a little bit, and I sprinkled on some of the injuries that he's had in the past, and kind of give him a mulligan for the one that he had that's just rather unfortunate. But if he's sitting around 270, man, I'm kind of changed my tune towards him a little bit. Like you said, it could get middling from now until then, because we could see more positive news, and more positive news means that he could gravitate just a little bit in ADP. So it will be interesting to see where he goes. But once he is back, the grade of the oblique strain, it was, you know, the most mild for it. So you are seeing a nice early return. And they don't seem to be too concerned about it right now. And yeah, hitting in the middle of an order, going to play every day, could be massive in counting stats if he stays on the field. So I like the discount if it's still there.
The Twins, they're having some troubles there with a bunch of guys that the team is just taking it easy with and being careful with. And obviously that's Alex Kirilloff with his wrist injury that's plagued him for the last few seasons, and obviously a good hitter when he's healthy. Jorge Polanco with the offseason stuff, and now looks like he won't be ready for opening day. And then, of course, Byron Buxton, though, he was back in the lineup today. He's just limited. They're kind of taking it easy with him. They want him to last all season, obviously, and so do all fantasy managers that drafted him. Max Kepler was hurt, but he looks like he's going to be okay. But looks like there are a lot of plate appearances, at least early on in the season, that are going to open up for guys like slap hitting Donovan Solano, currently first base eligible, could get some other eligibility. Probably not a main event pick, even in the later rounds, but it's going to get some playing time. Same thing with Kyle Farmer, lefty specialist, meaning you play him when you see a bunch of lefties on the board. That's when you'd pick him up. And then quite the opposite for Joey Gallo, when you got some righties on the board and you need some pop. And then Nick Gordon, likely going to play a lot more than was originally expected. So those are a few guys, just a note, that are going to see more playing time than usual. And then old friend Trevor Larnach looks like he may actually make the opening day lineup. Any of these guys intrigue you, or are you just going to be looking at them during Fab?
Yeah, Nick Gordon, he's kind of rising though. So his ADP is at 318. We saw a max of 384. So I'm assuming his ADP was kind of a little bit closer to like 350 or whatnot before the news of these injuries. So now we see a min of 267, which is kind of waiting that average, but a little bit of interest there at second base if I miss out. And I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later on as a positional discussion. And then Larnach, man, if I need an outfielder on reserve rounds, pick 450, this is the end of the draft. If he's going to be getting burned and I need something, potentially him. And then I have a lot of Max Kepler. I'm looking at Kepler, where just because he's sort of an everyday cleanup hitter. 358 is his ADP in the main event, and he has a min of 317, but now we're seeing the max of 414 after he was removed from spring with the hip tightness or hip discomfort. But like you mentioned, for Kepler, it's not supposed to be too severe, and he's not supposed to miss any time. So hopefully maybe he'll just stay where he's at, or go a little bit further down because of that news. Because I like him. He's boring, but why can't he be Mitch Haniger, right?
I have an intrinsic bias against him. I've really been, he's like on my list of guys like, I'm blanking, but there's a certain type of player profile. I'll maybe think of it later. Just guys that I don't like, and he's one of those. I could just still see him popping off. I know, he's a popular DFS play when he's, on occasion, especially when he was leading off and hitting some bombs against righties. He obviously has some solid pop, just a big batting average risk. Basically over the last two seasons, he's hitting right around 220. But hey, I mean, Max Muncy hit like 174 or something last year. So, and I happen to give him a pass. So who knows, good walk rate, decent guy. So he could end up paying off. And just a little side note, I don't know if you know this, his full name is Maximilian Kepler Rositzky.
Beautiful. I he's a German.
Yes, he is. Awesome. One more note on the some injury stuff. I mean, this isn't an injury at all, but some helium here is not going to take to lift off, and that's the Gavin Stone train. Gavin Stone, and actually shout out Brock Miller, Brockness Monster, friend of ours. Him and I, we were drafting during DC season. I was team Bobby Miller. He was team Gavin Stone, and this is around after pick 450, like 30, round 31 to 33. And I was always drafting Bobby Miller. They were in the same draft. Bobby Miller is a bigger prospect. He gets drafted ahead of him. And I'm just a big Bobby Miller guy, obviously not for this season, but we'll see. So at one point, one of these guys will make the team. But Gavin Stone, man, this dude was electric in the spring, and at 14 strikeouts in a little under 7 innings. He was demoted today. But man, that dude in AAA last year was impressive. Basically a 1.4 ERA over 100 minor league innings between AA and AAA. So this point, it looks like it's probably going to be Ryan Pepiot over Michael Grove for that fifth spot. Pepiot had a little setback, but he looks like he's back on track. But that's where we are there. So Gavin Stone probably would have gone like the Jared Schuster, Clark Schmidt route. By the way, Clark Schmidt now a 230 ADP, which just blows my freaking mind. And it could pay off, but I don't know. But yeah, that Gavin Stone train is not going to leave the station at this point.
Yeah, I think people, if they're interested in sort of hoarding or stashing one person, because the Dodgers rotation, right, is sort of thin, it's a lot thinner than we've seen in the past, they are going to have to rely on their youth movement much more than they have in the previous season. So Gavin Stone will most certainly get his opportunities. You mentioned our boy Brock Miller. Shout out to him. Him and I are drafting right next to each other in the Vegas main event. We did last year as well, but this year, I texted him and said, you know, I know we're competing against each other, but fuck, at least we get to spend a few hours sitting next to each other. Like, we're going to have a good time one way or another, you know? So excited to get to just sit next to him for that whole draft. But looking at the market now, Stone's going 30 plus picks earlier than Bobby Miller. I'm sorry, excuse me. And yeah, so the market has certainly shifted from a high stakes perspective. And then you mentioned Ryan Pepiot was in that competition for the fifth starter with Michael Grove. Pepiot did have that side tightness, but it isn't supposed to be too severe. So continue to monitor the beat reporters on Twitter that cover the Dodgers just to see, you know, if there's any updates or when there are updates with Pepiot. And then with Grove, he's going in the last round of main event. So if you do have Pepiot and you kind of pop your shot there in the last round, if we still don't have word, hopefully we do, you know, come this weekend, fuck, pop him too. And then cut bait with the one that it doesn't work out.
Oh, but that's the one problem with Pepiot, you know, just because he's a Dodgers pitcher and he's had a little bit of success last year when he came up, like, if it even looks like he's going to be getting that role, like I think this weekend, I don't think he's going to be anywhere past 400. He's going to be a guy in the 300s.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. For right now, his ADP, 419, min of 394. And then the max, which was the most recent one after the side tightness news, was 449, which was the last round. So that could end up working out pretty well too.
So quick little note here from our sponsor Prediction Spike. And Maddie, did you ever wish you could have had stock in a guy like Aaron Judge or Paul Goldschmidt? Well, now.
Yeah. Hold on. Oh, sorry. I cut you off. I actually do. And I was explaining some of that to my two and a half year old daughter today.
Oh, really?
About buying the dip on players. And
I love it. Well, yeah,
we were out having pizza and I was trying to tell her about stocks and shares. So please, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, that's amazing because now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. It's the only performance-based stock sports market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stock. It's like Robinhood and DraftKings had a baby. Sandy Alcantara up 149% over the last year, and investors are making a killing. Prediction Strike lets fans create profiles of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game. So don't just draft your favorite players, start investing in them. Simply download Prediction Strike. It's a new and easy-to-use app from the App Store, or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use code FTN, then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players just like you would real stock. The value of the player will change based upon game performance and supply and demand. You can trade your shares of players at any time as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Again, sign up with the promo code FTN to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. Again, Prediction Strike, promo code FTN.
And go get that Clark Schmidt stock.
Man, let's talk about that. I mean, yeah, let's talk about it. Main event ADP, it's hit. We've got 9 drafts in the books. And the starting pitchers, as is the case every single year, at least has been for the last, I don't know, 6-7 years, have really taken a huge jump in many cases, especially if you get past pick 100. You know, 2-3 rounds are on so many players. It's just, it's kind of wild to wrap your mind around it when you had been drafting in draft champions or different things all season. And guys like the Tampa Bay guys, for example, Drew Rasmussen and Jeffrey Springs, usually you can get those guys in the 150s, 160s, 170s, round 10, 11, 12. These guys are both now going in the 120s, which in a 15 teamer, it's about round 7 or 8. Same thing with like Joe Bryan. We've seen Chris Sale jump into the top 100. Reed Detmers, who's going to be on 6-man rotation as far as we still know. I mean, he's now going in the 10th round. People want to jump one another for Reed Detmers. So, I mean, this is wild, right? I mean, this crazy ADP helium is wild. And if you are going to be drafting this weekend in main event and in other NFBC drafts where most likely there'll be some effect from this, how do you plan? I mean, you know, is it mapping out? Do you push guys even higher? Like, what's your kind of your overall plan with these starting pitchers?
Yeah, stick to the plan. Pony up early. Get your foundation, and then you don't have to start pushing up these guys that might not, you know, supposed to be getting pushed up as much as they are. And then, you know, each fantasy baseball player has a certain blueprint of how they like to attack their pitching. Some like to start with two or three within their first five. Some like to start with two. Some like maybe one or none. And the people that are doing the one or none, and I think I might know some, they are going to probably start pushing up some of these guys, and it makes it really tough, right? When it comes from a draft acquisition spot, each spot should be looked at as, you know, an acquisition cost, and the earlier, obviously, the higher. And like you mentioned with Reed Detmers, he was going picks 200, 230, somewhere around there, and now he's got a min in the main event at 125. You've just now set the expectations and what you need to return a profit on that draft pick. It's substantially increased from where it was. So, yeah, there you could be right, and that could pay a profit. But I think that I'm willing to just kind of pick my spots and stick to my plan. And if you are drafting, you know, two starting pitchers, at least in the first four or five rounds, I think that you'll find yourself not necessarily feeling the need to push up some of these guys as aggressive as we are going to see.
And then, so now that a lot of folks that are going to Vegas or doing these drafts online and they have their KDS spot, the one piece of advice, and I think a lot of people know this, but then it's hard to actually enact when you're there in person, is not getting too hung up on a certain guy. Like, you have a certain plan going in. Say you are pick, you know, 14, and you're like, I need a starting pitcher, and most likely Burns or Cole are not going to fold to me. So Spencer Strider is my only guy. I need Spencer Strider for my plan to go. And if he goes to 12 or 13, it can happen. He's got a min of 12, a max of 22 so far. Then what are you going to do? And in some cases, I think most people have a backup plan, but in the case of that being your plan with the Spencer Strider at the end of the first, there really isn't anything similar, right? Like, are you now comfortable to pop to Grom there? Are you going to, you know, go crazy and take like an Aaron Nola at the end of the first round? Like, I can't do that, right? So you then have to think of a different draft strategy. So it's, I think it's so very important to map things out. Of course, as far as you can go down to having your late round targets is great. People set up, do things in different ways. Some people have a paper cheat sheet. Some people print out VDP. Some people, you know, like to, you know, use draft software. Just so many ways to go about it. But the mapping out, I think, is crucial. I think it's super key. And you need to also remain flexible, right? Because with the yin of starting pitchers moving up, there will be a yang, right? Like, you will have wonderful values drop. Like, a guy who I have in the top 30 overall in Francisco Lindor is going in the 40s, like end of the third, early fourth, in some cases, like, you know, late 40s. I mean, he's kind of boring, but it's Francisco Lindor, 25, 15, 90, 100. Like, he's solid, right? So there's going to be a lot of deals, I think, on hitters that will come at the expense of these pitchers going early.
Yeah, so I love the example that you said, your team 12. And no matter what, you've told your buddies and you're looking at your models and your spreadsheets and your evaluations. And no matter what, you're taking the starting pitcher in the first round. That's just your plan. And what if this one does get pushed up to where even Cole, Burns, Strider, they're all gone, and even DeGrom's gone, and now, like, are you just going to just keep taking whichever pitcher's there? What if Bo Bichette or Bobby Witt, and it's been known that I'm not the biggest Bobby Witt guy, but at pick 12, right? Like, I'm not going to be popping like the fourth or fifth guy on my evaluation sheet as a pitcher just because I want to take a pitcher. I made that mistake last year. I'm getting Chris Bryant in the fourth round. Pete Alonso, I didn't even fucking notice Pete Alonso was available, because when it was the fourth round, all I was worried about is don't say Chris Bryant. And then when it came to me, I was like, oh yeah, Chris Bryant, I got my target. And like, come on, like, Pete Alonso over Chris Bryant is a no-brainer. And I would have known that if you had just paused me for a minute and said, hey, look at what's going on, look at what's available, think about this, you know, kind of pause for a second. And if I would have done that and noticed that you don't just necessarily have to have the guy, flexibility is huge, man. There are people that fall, especially in these live drafts, because people are doing all sorts of different, you know, you did the pen and paper and the iPad and the, you know, laptop example, and sometimes things do fall through the cracks. So flexibility is huge. And then not being so set on a certain player or position at any given point. I think that we do need to be flexible on that as well.
I think one way to help combat that, and it does take a little time, and I know the drafts are coming up, but I think one of the things I do is I set my pre-draft rankings in the NFBC to the way that I want it, so I don't miss anyone. So even though I feel like I've drafted so much, I know the player pool, I got my little map out sheet, I still want to make sure that nothing slips through the cracks, and especially if you're doing it one of your first times, you kind of want to have that order list just to make sure you don't miss anyone. So different ways to go about that. And by the way, Pete Alonso was he returned first round value last season, and he's basically entrenched firmly in the second round, just kind of one of those boring guys. Just to, you know, I mean, he's just a guy that can basically, like, you know, lead the majors in home runs with ease. And he's going between, you know, I mean, he's going as far as like 26 at some point.
Last year, you and I both chose Kyle Schwarber to in our FTN 2022, you know, season predictions. We both chose Kyle Schwarber. This year, I chose Pete Alonso. So hopefully I can repeat in that category at least.
Yes. And that'll be out. That's going to come out a couple days before the season. So we're going to have our superlatives, awards, and all those things, all those predictions are give everyone a chance on staff and our guest writers to give you their next year's or this year's Yelich.
Did you see mine?
Yes, I did. Let's punt that discussion for a later time. Real quick, another couple of interesting pitchers that have now been pushed up like wild. Justin Verlander, somebody that during DC season, I mean, there were times you could get him. I don't know, early fourth round, even in 15 teamers. He's got an ADP of 25. So basically middle of the second round, 40-year-old Verlander there, minimum pick of 16. If I'm not mistaken, I think maybe Bob Kramatola set that one. I could be mistaken. Sorry, Bob, if that's not the case, but Justin Verlander, man, how do you feel about this new price tag for him?
Yeah, it's kind of what you're going to be seeing. I don't know, man, like second, I would like to get him in the third round. I'm not out on him certainly. And if I miss out on a pitcher in the first round, I could see myself popping them in the second round. So I guess I got to say that I'm backing it a bit. But all these guys are rising. So when you look at somebody, you know, Verlander, Scherzer, McClanahan, Woodruff, Alcantara, Javier, right? Those are like kind of the ones that are being pushed up the most into that second, third, turn area. It's just hopefully you pick the right one. There'll probably be a couple that don't end up working out, whether it be due to regression or injury. But for me, with Verlander being in the NL, and obviously there's going to be parity with the new schedule and stuff, I don't mind him. He looks pretty damn good still. So I guess I'm okay with it, I guess, which is not something I normally say about Justin Verlander.
Well, and it's also something that we need to reset in our minds and recognize that this is the new price tag, at least if you're playing in this contest. And obviously not everyone is, but like this is
in this economy.
And if you want them, that's where you have to look at it, which what that means is you basically need to be, you need to have like a 5-6 pick, right? So you start off with a Jose Ramirez and a Verlander. I mean, that's pretty solid if that's what you want to do. But part of that equation and looking into it is, okay, what pitchers might be there for me in the third round around pick 36? And do I maybe take a hitter that has fallen? Like if Alonso is there and you started off with like Jose Ramirez and Alonso, you got some speed, you got some power. What am I looking at there in the third? Like, will a Woodruff fall to me? Am I happy with that? I know you wouldn't be, Scherzer, Alcantara, like, you know, who else is there? So it's all part of the puzzle. That's really part of the fun too, right? Is mapping this stuff out.
Yeah, but sometimes that's where you show up to your first live event and you go, wow, I ended up with the max pick on Jose Ramirez, like you said, for the first round. And then I got the max pick on Pete Alonso. I couldn't believe it. And then I really wanted JT Realmuto in the third for the speed and the catcher and the scarcity. And I got him too. And then you're like, oh, fuck. Round four, round five, and already, let's say, Freed and the Urias, right? Those guys are gone, and now you're, am I popping Alec Manoah in round four? Now you're the guy that's pushing.
Well, that's where
you said you didn't want to pay you didn't want to pony up, and now you know you're kind of, hey, what do I got to do now? Now I got to push somebody up, and now you're pushing up this next tier. You know what I mean? It's there's a trickle down effect if you wait too long.
Yes, but then at that point, this is where patience, being an experienced drafter, being comfortable in, you know, these type of pressure situations, you can still, you know,
yes,
wiggle out of it in your own way, right? So you don't necessarily have, I mean, you don't, you shouldn't panic and all of a sudden push up guys earlier just because you need a pitcher in the spot. Maybe you take something else and then you hit 3-4 pitchers in a row, right? Or you look for that pockets of value, or maybe there's, you know, the guys that are going in the 8th, 9th, 10th who you really like, who you think can return 4th, 5th round value, those Joe Ryan, Rasmussen, Springs, Giolito, Lance Lynn, whomever, and maybe you just play in that area a little bit more. You know that there will absolutely be deals there. And then you basically just hit, in a scenario like that, you hit the middle round pitchers a little harder, because as you know, the late round guys are going to have a lot more warts and question marks. If you're, you know, I mean, granted, no matter how much everybody loves Kyle Bradish right now, and the fact that he's gone, basically jumped from like a 320 ADP to like 240 or something like that, like it gets out of hand at some point, right? You start seeing tweets and a lot of really smart people really like him, whatever. And then like the season starts and then reality hits. And then like that first start, he gives up 5 earned runs, you know, I mean, knock on wood for, you know, people that have him, whatever, but like you almost need to like kind of think and project, remember like what happened last season, this season, like there are going to be blemishes along the way, and not like, you know, not everything's going to be, you know, sunshine and roses or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the first point that you made though is like, if you did, you are that guy that got the max on J-Ram and Pete Alonso, and you got your third round target in J.T. Realmuto or whatever it may be. That is the great point right there, is you don't feel that pressure to be like, oh, now I do have to pony up and push some pitching up because it's going too quick. Just get stronger, right? And then figure it out just a little bit later. Maybe there's a better pocket to just kind of start to dive into. And then what are you thinking about some of these, the late rounds? How are you attacking that? Like the last few rounds of the draft, is it always I'm filling out my second middle infielder, my backup hitter, or is it I have a plan of attack because this is what's going on around me?
It's funny you say that, because it segues kind of nicely, and we can handle it in tandem, is talking about the middle infield and the second baseman, because obviously we have lost Jose Altuve from being there. I mean, there are only so few second basemen going in the top 100 as is. Most of the guys are, you know, going, like all the Brandon Lowe's, Polanco's, India's, Estrada's, all these guys are like going after 150, you know, 150 to 250. And now you've got Vaughn Grissom not really in the picture anymore, who was a big target for people. And for me, I noticed this in DC season as well, that at some point I realized I'm short at middle infield. And maybe that's just like a personal weakness, or maybe it's something with the player pool. Most likely it's a combo of the two. But that's what happened to me. I got caught not having a solid middle infielder, and I ended up with, I mean, I don't know if you like him, but like, I did not have Chris Taylor as a target. And there came a point where it was Chris Taylor and Luis Rengifo as like my only guys. And, you know, looking there at like, I think it was like the 22nd round, 23rd, as a middle infielder. And man, Chris Taylor's striking out like a beast, man, just like last year. And in a beast, I don't mean in a good way. It's like, you know, 40%, I think, in spring. And it was pretty bad last year. And granted, maybe, hey, I get a good 4 games out of him in Arizona to start. But as I'm building, and per your question about those late round picks, I also want to see how my lineup is looking in that first week. And I noticed that maybe I need to concentrate a little bit more on making sure I have a solid middle infielder, because I'm also going to want a backup there, right? And I don't want a complete scrub, somebody can drop right away. So maybe that's something I myself need to prioritize, so I don't end up with a, you know, Christopher Morel, Chris Taylor, or Luis Rengifo as my middle.
I think for me, I want the one of those, obviously an early shortstop, because there's a lot of studs up top. And then for middle infield, get a shortstop. And then when it comes to second base and targets, like, Jazz is just the dude at the top for me. He always has been above Semien or Altuve before his injury. I've seen some love for him though. He's got a min pick, you know, in the mid second round. So, that might be tough to swallow, but, either way, yeah, if I miss out on Jazz, I'm not going to – it's kind of like similar to third base with second base right now, right? Some people, at least in my opinion, with Alex Bregman, use him as an example. I feel like sometimes we might just be drafting the person there because it's – you're starting to look around. It's like, well, who else now is available and look at the position and he's a stud, right? And so we kind of just click the button or say the name. Second base might end up getting like that a little bit. You could see some inflation from some of these players in the next tier or two, as people start to panic a little bit in these drafts. But there's some guys when it thins down, there are some guys down here that I think can still get the job done. And for me to get the job done, not having a terrible average, not being super abysmal in one specific category, and then where are you at in the lineup? So I think Ketel Marte, he's going on average right now is the 15th, or we could call it the 14th second baseman if we exclude Altuve. So for Ketel Marte, you know, top 15 second baseman, hitting at the top of this young, I think a lot of people like this ascending, or we're thinking it's going to be an ascending offense in Arizona. He would be somebody that you would like to look at. Somebody like that, you know, Jake Cronenworth, boring, going to play all the time in a really good offense. That's important, right? So for me, where you're hitting at and how much you're playing.
It's funny that you mentioned Cronenworth because he's somebody that I just haven't drafted. I'm a fan of his as a real life player, even though he does play for the Padres.
Padres like him as a real life player too.
Yeah, man. And it's a great lineup. He's got two positions of eligibility, kind of does a little bit of everything. And now would consider somebody like that around, you know, where he goes if I am looking for a second baseman and my other targets were gone. But yeah, man, I think what's going to happen in season is there are going to be some issues with if something doesn't work out with your second baseman. And if you're like me and you've been punting it for the most part, I mean, you got to punt somewhere, right? You can't have full strength everywhere. And I've been happy and okay grabbing a second baseman that goes basically between like, you know, round 12 and round 10 and 15, like a, you know, a Gene Segura type, Ketel Marte. I've been fine with those guys. But what happens is in season, we're going to have problems if those guys don't work out for us. The replacement value, the fab, and sure, guys will pop up here and there, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be like, you know, Nolan Gorman, someone just dropped him, but then he's only playing half the time. You got to look at his platoon splits. It's a punchless Tony Kemp. It's, Rodolfo Castro's hitting 150, you know, the first 2 weeks, but you got to, you know, get somebody, earmuffs, Orlando Arcia, God forbid, you know. So it can get really nasty. That's why I'm kind of thinking more so like in my next couple of drafts, I'm going to be very in tune, I think, for second base. And doesn't mean necessarily popping one early, but really having a nice plan for it and making sure I'm not getting myself in a hole, in a pickle, with the middle infielders.
Yeah, because the volume could dry up. And also, you were talking about like Rodolfo Castro and team context. Like, you're taking a second baseman that's hitting sixth on the Pirates. Oh, he's hurting you. It's bad.
Yeah.
Things have gone wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of things that may go wrong, but apparently the whole world thinks is going to go right, is people think there's going to be a Julio Rodriguez part due this season. And whether that's with Jordan Walker, who I've seen go in the top 100, but for the most part going, you know, around 120, 130, and Anthony Volpe, who we might see insane helium. If for whatever reason he makes the team before Vegas, I could totally see something like that happening. He's going to go easy top 100, especially with the, you know, all the stuff with him potentially, like, you know, if he does play, he would lead off ahead of Judge. Like, I mean, there's just all this stuff, and he's the young hot rookie. But man, I don't know what it is. And you know me, I'm somebody that takes risks, but I'm more like a risk. And maybe this is wrong, but I'm, you know, some of the older, like last year's bums guys, those are more my speed rather than paying like full price helium on players that have no major league experience that I think are gonna have times when they legit struggle and could potentially get sent down too. So I just have not been able to get on those trains, but I could see why people do.
Yeah, that's took the words right out of my mouth. That's kind of how I've gone about my business. Didn't have any Bobby Witt or Julio Rodriguez in the main events last year because the helium was round four, round five. Not necessarily sure. I don't think that we'll end up seeing that with Volpe or Walker. If Volpe does get named to that opening day roster, though, and he's the leadoff hitter, where does he go? That's the question I kind of want to ask. Can I take a guess? Give me the gut guess. I want the gut guess on Volpe's opening day starter hitting leadoff, and we know that going into Vegas.
He'll go. Someone will take him at the, you know, like the 3-4 turn, because you know why though. But think about it, and I'm not saying it's right.
I would not do that. Sure.
Bobby Witt, 75 overall, all winter long, and then boom, named into the starting lineup and mashing in spring, and boom, there you go, pick 45. That's where he was popped off. Yeah. It worked out.
Yep. Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's always the beauty of it.
And for what it's worth, Jordan Walker's currently going middle of the eighth round, call it.
Middle of the eighth, yeah.
Yeah.
And, man, I'm honestly, that's a very competitive lineup. That's a really, really strong lineup. So there is an absolute possibility that Jordan Walker, I mean, I would love to roster him and love to see him have a Julio season. But, I mean, these guys all have warts too, right? It's not quite like, you know, Nolan Gorman last year heading into the season. Actually, shout out Dave McDonald, who was like, really, you know, hey guys, be careful. Nolan Gorman, dude, is a, you know, 40%, 35% strikeout guy in the minors, you know, sort of platoon guy. Yeah, he got hot for a little bit and then, you know, cooled off. And now I think people are kind of off him in general. But, you know, all these rookies, kind of, you know, not everybody comes in like Julio Rodriguez and just right. like, you know, changes the universe.
Yeah, it's and it can be a tough scene if you have to swallow that early draft capital. If you even Jordan Walker, we'll just say where he's going, right? Eighth round. Did you just pass up a starting catcher? Some of those guys are going right there. Are you passing up your SP3, SP4, potentially your RP1? There's other really good middle infielders, shortstops going around that range. So, earlier, each draft slot has an acquisition cost, and you just kind of need to be aware of what you're willing to swallow when you say or click on that name, because there's also a reality that these guys are back in the minor leagues. That's in the range of outcomes, or range in outcomes, I should say. And for me, that scares the shit out of me with early draft capital.
Well, and then there's also the possibility that no matter how awesome Jordan Walker is doing here in the minors, right now in spring training, there's the possibility that he still does not make the opening day lineup to start this season. There's a huge possibility. And so knowing that risk, you take him in the eighth, and then you're going to be, you know, it's really hard for people to have some people do, and these are kind of more like the Hall of Famers, the super veterans that are really good at, you know, they don't really target those type of players. So they don't end up having a lot of, baggage or basically like, you know, stashes on their team, but you can end up with a lot of them, right? Like, man, you got to have Brandon Fat, right, for when he comes up. You got to have this guy, that guy. Like, it really becomes an issue, and you can't be short on a bench. You can't be going into the season with like three guys that you need to turn around, you know, turn over right away in this first Fab period just to field a full lineup for the first week of the season.
Yeah, no doubt. You can win an overall. I think I've said this in the past with guys like Ian Happ and
not Ian Happ, but yeah.
You know what I mean? Just those, but before Jorge Polanco's, you know, still screwed up, but guys like that, you know what I mean? The guys are just, boring's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. We all need that. We all need a little bit of boring in our lives, or we wouldn't be living as healthy as we should be, I think.
This is true. Let's kick things off or end things here with, I'm just not kicking off, but, advantages, schedule advantages for end gamers. So we're looking at hitters, pitchers towards the end of the draft. And I think it's important, like when you're drafting, you can't just blindly like, I love this player, I want these players, or I need four hitters and three pitchers on my bench. It doesn't really matter to me like what you start off your bench being. It just needs to make sense for the beginning of your season, right? So that's why I think it's important to look at the schedule, see where pitchers are going to line up to start and things like that. So you want to be able to, you know, fill in those roster spots, get all your hitters in and your nine pitchers, whatever mix of closers and starters it is, that you feel comfortable with going into that that first week of the season. You will have an opportunity Sunday to make some changes and Fab and things like that, but hey, you may already be spending money you don't want to. So I thought it might be a good idea for us to point out some of these players, some of these schedules. And of course, this is straight from our book, right? Like these are, if you're going up against me in the main event, these are players that I'm looking at. But
yeah,
the first thing I wanted to throw out there is the Tampa Bay Rays have an awesome schedule to start. So their first four series, it's against the Tigers. Then they get three against Washington, then three against Oakland, then three against Boston. So for hitters, obviously, you know, I mean, obviously you're starting guys like, you know, Brandon Lowe and things like that, but you know, Manny Margot, you got him on your team. That's an easy start as your outfield four or five. You can take a stab on like a Harold Ramirez. Mm-hmm. Obviously you would start Isaac Paredes, I think in, you know, early on. You got players that you can use. And then even there's a competition, like, you know, I have a soft spot for Josh Lowe, even though he may suck. But you know, if he makes the team, I'm interested. I've been drafting some shares of him. But there's like a 40% chance that Luke Raley, by the way, former Dodger, grabs that last roster spot over Laos, right? So he can be like a 30th rounder if they announce him before the team. But that's where I wanted to start with that schedule for Tampa.
Yeah, I think it's it would be for me, like, how to attack that schedule the most would be, can I get the fourth or fifth starter, right? How do we get those good ratios and potential wins? You talked about Yonny Chirinos, who's been battling injuries for the last couple of seasons. He's back battling in that fifth spot for Luis Patino, who also had injuries last year. Patino's the guy for me when it comes to that, and it's because his velocity is kind of back where it was. He's throwing 97, which is good. So if he does get the spot, I think that he could potentially take advantage of it and pay off some dividends where he's going in drafts. His Patino's ADP is 443. The young guy that people like is Taj Bradley. But he's gone at the last, you know, last pick, 30th round, 450.
He's getting drafted. So
yeah. He is a little bit. Yeah.
Feels like a lot of stashing to me. Right?
Yeah. Not really for me. Instead of stashing somebody like Taj Bradley, I'm much more willing to stash, let's say, if there's a bullpen with speculations, right? A committee of, let's call it a team's using a committee. I'll take the second guy that's, you know, in line in the pecking order and hope there's a back-to-back save opportunity and they get the second one or whatever it may be. I'd rather just use a good reliever and get some strikeouts that first weekend, because Taj Bradley is probably not going to be useful for you if he's not pitching in the major leagues, right? So it's important to fulfill those stats each week.
And like, 90% chance you're dropping him, right? Because I mean, Yonny Chirinos and Luis Patino are fighting for the fifth spot. Whichever guy doesn't make it, it's going to be like a long reliever or whatever. Like, it would take a couple injuries really for Bradley. I mean, they still want to develop him. He's obviously, you know, stud arm. He's not going to get in there unless, you know, a few things don't go right and then they bring him in mid season. So if you're using him as a 30th round pick and he's your only stash because you love him, you're a big prospects guy, or you know him, you know, from your neighborhood or whatever, like, it makes sense. But other than that, guess what? You're probably going to be dropping him. Very high chance to drop him. Use those picks instead on, like, you said it, right? Look at the schedule. What relievers can I use, right? Like, Rafael Montero may not be the closer. He might get a lucky win or a save. They get four against the White Sox that first week. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of guys like that. That Mets pen, right? You could take a shot on, like, a Brooks
Diamondbacks.
Diamondbacks, like, a lot of guys there, like seven closers.
Take a shot on that instead of a reliever, or a pitcher that's likely not going to be starting the season. At least for me, if you're playing in the main event, of course, this is a different breed than you know, a home league or something like that. But yeah, you're going to want to be fulfilling those with actual statistics. And the relievers, for me, I like to roll those out when I have a fourth or fifth starter that doesn't start the first weekend. You gotta supplement them with some of these guys.
And these guys aren't going to be ramped up either, right? You think Yonny Chirinos, he wins that fifth spot. You think he's going five innings? I understand it's the, you know, it'll be that first full week and it'll be the Nationals. But like, I can much more see, you know, Corey Dickerson, Joey Meneses, you know, kind of going off on him rather than him, like, you know, pitching like five clean and getting you a win. There's like a lot of things that have to go right. So I'm all for it. If they're one of those guys you like and you want a stash, but you got to plan it out and it's pretty much has to be your only one.
Yeah. I'll take the boring pitchers on Kansas City over a stash at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Lyles, Greinke, those guys.
Brad Keller, baby. He's Brad one of my highest rostered pitchers.
Old name.
We'll see. But at the end of those drafts, right? Kind of that's a good game theory kind of segue there is, what are you looking to do? When obviously you've mentioned looking at matchups with some of those, but also just trying to fulfill those last slots with usable players that first weekend, right?
Yeah, and especially on the on the pitching side. So yeah, and especially because the relievers are going to come in handy, right? Like so many things can happen. You could grab a couple of saves that are going to matter for you down the stretch. And if you really thought out how to address that first half week of the season, those saves could be the difference between winning or ending up second place in your league. You're like, man, I was just one save short. If I had just played Kevin Ginkle against the Dodgers that first week, you know, I mean, could always play that what if game, yeah. Whatever. But yeah, definitely plan out all those slots. One other team here, the Reds at home for six. I mean, of course, half of that is in that first period that it's its own period. It's three against Pittsburgh, and then they'll get three against the Cubs. So six home games to start for the Reds, even though it's not an all in one period. Obviously, I think if you have Hunter Green, you're spending a top 100 pick on him, top 150 on Lodolo. I think you start those guys against the Pirates, kind of no brainer. But the hitters, I think, work out too. These, you know, TJ Friedl's of the world, Jake Fraley's, maybe even Will Benson. He's getting some helium.
Yeah. The funny part about that, though, is, yeah, so, find the guys, good parks, right, from you take a DFS perspective and look at it. You want to look at it week to week, and it just so happens it makes it much easier when it's just that first weekend or the first 7 to 10 days or whatever it may be. You can kind of microscope it just a little bit easier, especially because we're all motivated and everything's fresh. But it does kind of, for the Green and Lodolo, you mentioned, well, they're at home and you got to start them. You drafted them. It's like, are you really already like thinking, am I going to start them because they're pitching at home in Cincinnati in Great American Small Park against the Pirates? Like, of course you are. But like, when the season starts and you start looking at the schedule and what's actually going on, though, you know what I mean? Like you talked about Bradish earlier, you pony up this whatever X round pick. He goes out there, gives up five runs against, I don't think they're playing the Yankees, but they're playing the Yankees and, you know, it goes bad. It's like, what the fuck did I just do? Or what was I prepping or thinking of? Not that that's the case, but that happens, right? When we actually begin and the curtains get pulled back and we see the actual schedule and you start to see reality set and it's like, oh man, I guess I should have probably waited this or that more. Not necessarily the pitchers for the Reds, but that's just an example of a big macro point of like when everything starts to actually happen. It's like, oh, okay. Maybe I should have done some.
Well, that's my Marquez strategy. I mean, that was my thing. I remember, what was it? 2 years ago, 3 years ago, not last year as much, but it was like people were all about Herman Marquez and I forgot where he was going. It was like in the mid to, 220, 250. And I'm thinking to myself, not a freaking chance. Go ahead and draft him. Guess what happens when the season starts? If you draft your SP 4 or 5 and you're already thinking that you may have to bench him the first week, no, thank you. And I understand Hunter Green and Lodolo are in a whole different ballpark, right? I'm not even, you know, literally in a different ballpark, but and not a great ballpark for them. But still, like, this is part of the reason why I'm a little out on them, right? I mean, they could be amazing and they can both maybe post under 3 ERAs. I don't think they will, but it's possible. But because of like kind of where they go, like where they're going in drafts, and despite the high strikeout upside of them, of both of them, both can get 200 plus strikeouts than 150, 160 innings, very possible. I just can't do it because I can't deal with that kind of that stress a week to week. And again, I'm not saying, you know, Marquez is on these guys' stratosphere whatsoever, but I just have a hard time clicking on a Hunter Green at 98 overall. And, you know, can end up hurting me, but just doesn't work for me because there will be times where I might be considering like, hey, I don't know if I really want to start him, but he's my SP2. So I kind of have to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, when I'm drafting somebody in round 6, 7, 8, set it and forget it, hopefully.
Yeah, indeed. Any last minute thoughts? We're about to be, you know, getting ready. I think you're really getting ready to head out of here into Western City.
Yeah, I have to finish packing my bags and I catch my flight in the morning. Like I said, you find me at the United Club Lounge having some Bloody Marys. And I can't wait to see you along with other people, but it's going to be a great time. We have there's an itinerary. We all have itineraries, right? So it's going to be hard to navigate through all of it, but it is exciting because it's just nothing but goodness and it's nothing but good people.
It's really weird. Even like the people that, you know, might even be iffy on Twitter and obviously y'all know who you are really cool in person. It's really crazy. It's just like a weird, you know. I'm talking about you, Masato. Talking about you, Mike Masato.
Yeah,
awesome dude in person.
If you think Mike Masato isn't cool, he actually kind of sort of is. And he's definitely a good person. He's a big fucking teddy bear. So if you're out in Vegas, come say hi to us. Yeah, we'll be there.
And I'm excited. I'm going to be doing my first auction in quite a few years live in NFBC on Friday morning. So I'm pretty pumped about that. Just excited about the weekend in general. It's going to be a lot of fun. Look forward to seeing you as well, bud.
All right. Well, till next time. I'll see you in the desert.
All right. For Matthew, Matty Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.